Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Winter is now spring. Goes from cold snaps to heat waves, or a month of rain overnight. Welcome to the new world.
Climate-driven extreme weather could suddenly change your life. You're about to hear from climate survivors in the USA and Canada. From stormy Louisiana to a Canadian Arctic town losing to the sea. Hey, I'm on summer break, but I couldn't help notice the climate casino is unloading like never before. We have an unreported global heat wave around the Northern Hemisphere, punctuated by zones of extreme rains and floods over and over again. Heat records extend from China to northern Finland. In America, CBS News reports a massive heat dome over half the country in the third week of June. As you know, seven states broke or tied high monthly records. When it went over 110 degrees, 43°C in Maryland, almost 500 people sought emergency care for heat-driven illness. There are hundreds of heat deaths in the United States. Overnight lows in Massachusetts were above 80 degrees, almost 27°C at night. In New England, one day, New York City's heat index reached nearly 130 degrees Fahrenheit, 54°C. For millions in the South and East, the heat has been punctuated by storm after storm. Between July 1st and July 14th alone, there were 1,762 flash flood or flood warnings. South Korea just experienced its heaviest rain in 120 years of record keeping. Across the hot, dry forest of Canada, wildfire smoke has already reached Europe several times. Canada's capital, Ottawa, and its largest city, Toronto, had withering hot and polluted episodes. Not much reported in the West. Pakistan had weeks of heat beyond human limits. A place in China reached 46°C, 110 Fahrenheit, in their long-lasting heat dome, which extends into Japan, which itself set all kinds of records. It's been that hotter every day in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Iran is burning hot, 125.6 degrees Fahrenheit in Iraq, 52°C. It's like a ribbon of extra heat stretching across the top of Africa and running all the way to the Pacific, including Indonesia. Europe, as you know, has been wildly hot right up into the UK. One expert rated the odds of the heat wave in the Western Mediterranean Sea at 1 billion to 1. Temperatures up to 48°C in Greece appeared again, 118 Fahrenheit in the shade. A new report projects extreme heat could lead up to 30,000 deaths a year in England and Wales by the 2070s. Scandinavia set dozens of new heat records right up into Lapland and the far north. On July 18th, heat historian Maximiliano Herrera reported 180 countries broke temperature records. I think we can call this a global heat wave. Beyond the numbers and the sad loss of loved ones to the heat, we have half a world of suffering people trying to cope every day.
This program from 2024 saw testimony from some of them.
We traveled to burned out Paradise, California, and drowned Vermont. If these stories don't move you, see a heart specialist. Warning, this is raw trauma. We start right now. Phoenix, Arizona is the hottest city in America. Last year, the county containing Phoenix recorded 645 heat deaths. That official tally is way below reality. Most of Arizona just declared another heat emergency, expecting temperatures to 113 degrees, a blistering 45 degrees C, rare in early June. The same day, two extreme heat survivors from Arizona spoke at a national press event organized by Public Citizen and the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. The title was, Climate Survivors Across the U.S. Tell Their Stories, Demand Fossil Fuel Polluters Be Held Accountable. You will hear several speakers from that event. We begin with Sizzling Tucson. Deborah and Patrice Parker are introduced by Quinton Scott of Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Then Patrice Parker, granddaughter, begins.
Next up, we have Deborah Parker and her granddaughter, Patrice Parker, from Arizona. Deborah is a retired nurse, has lived in Arizona since 1982. Her granddaughter, Patrice Parker, is 18 years old and a student and part-time cashier who spent her entire life in Arizona. Patrice has diabetes and asthma, making it incredibly scary to live through a deadly heat in Arizona. They can't leave the house at all when it gets into the high triple digits. The bills are astronomical because the high temperatures don't even come down at night, so they have to keep the AC on nonstop, starting to need it early and earlier every year. Deborah and Patrice, we look forward to hearing from you both.
My name is Patrice Parker. I am 18 and have many medical issues. As the weather gets hotter, I experience terrible flare-ups because of the excessive heat, and every year it gets worse. I have increased pain in my bones, joints, and muscles. My migraines are worse and more often. My fatigue and complete exhaustion, high heart rate, anxiety, and depression are always worse when it's summer because of the heat. The hot air makes it hard for me to breathe with my asthma. Think of standing in front of an oven when you open the doors and trying to take a deep breath. It hurts my lungs. My POTS worsens with increased heart rate, and I am dizzier, even drinking extra fluids. Because of the heat, I avoid going out during the day if possible, because even a little exercise in the heat makes me feel terrible. I think about the outside temperatures when scheduling doctor's appointments and try to go early in the day when it is cooler. I can't walk outside unless it's in the evening and when it's dark, but even then it can be above 100 degrees at night. When it's over 110 outside, my depression worsens because I'm stuck inside. When we do go out during the summer, it takes time for the car to cool. The heat increases my heart rate. Even walking through the parking lot can be difficult due to the high temperatures and effects on my body. I work in retail and management doesn't let me deliver orders outside because it's not safe for me because of the heat. Just a few steps outside in the heat, my heart rate can rise above 160 easily. It's scary for me because it's getting hotter every year and the challenges I face are getting harder with every summer.
Thank you, Patrice. My name is Deborah Parker. I've lived in Arizona since 1982 when I moved here as a new RN. I've raised my family here, and although it's been hot back then, it's so much worse now. My daughter has chronic medical issues, and we have to be very aware when scheduling appointments or going out during the summer. We rarely wear shorts because the seats will burn the back of your legs. The metal on the seatbelt latch will burn your skin when it makes contact with you. The steering wheel is so hot, you need to have a cover or wear gloves, otherwise you risk burning your hands. Always, always have ice water, multiple bottles, because if you break down in your car, you have to have a plan to keep cool until assistance arrives. I'm getting older and I walk extra carefully when I'm in parking lots, because if you fall, the asphalt will burn your skin almost immediately. I use ice packs in the grandkids' car seats to prevent burns and pre-cool the car. When my other kids were little, I didn't worry about the extreme heat. Yeah, it was hot and I was careful, but this is so much worse. As we navigate our daily lives during summer, life slows down drastically. The heat makes every muscle and bone feel like it's on fire when you have chronic illnesses. Cardiac symptoms are exacerbated because of the increased heat. Migraines are more intense and frequent. Yes, almost everything is air conditioned, but the time it takes to cool the car before and after the drive and the walk through the parking lot is challenging when you have chronic medical issues compounded by the excessive heat. I can feel the heat from the parking lot through my shoes as I walk. You learn not to stop too long. We are still in the first week of June, and starting at the end of last month, I have received almost daily excessive heat warning alerts through my phone. We are driving to Phoenix today, and it's estimated and forecasted that it'll be 113. This is still the first week of June. This is crazy. You know, the joke is Arizona's heat is a dry heat. Sure. You know, envision standing in front of your oven and trying to take deep breaths and continue breathing as that heat's in your face. It's difficult. It's hard to carry on your usual activities. The increased heat affects my power bill as well. In the winter, I spend about $30 to $60 a month just to keep the house warm. In the summer, the bill easily exceeds $300, $400. And that's keeping the house at 79 degrees. It's not comfortable, but it's bearable. It's better than being outside. You know, every time the air conditioning kicks on, I think about the bill and just realize it's just going up and up every day. And I'm disabled and on a fixed income. The power bills are another stressor added to the challenges we already have. The high bills used to be just in August and September, but now it's June through October. There's just no relief from it. Day-to-day life has been altered, and it's becoming so much worse. The future terrifies me. The oil and gas companies need to be held accountable. They have made record profits polluting our world as they knowingly cause climate change, and we pay the price every day as we suffer through the heat. Thank you.
You just heard from Deborah and Patrice Parker in Red Hot Tucson, Arizona. That's life in the new hot world. Learn and get used to it, or stop the heat. Climate action. Now from too hot in the U.S. Southwest to too hot and stormy on the Gulf Coast of Louisiana. Very little aid goes to those who need it most as they struggle for years. Rashida Ozani is a survivor of hurricanes, fires, tornadoes, and pollution on the U.S. Gulf Coast. She lived in the petrochemical town of Sulphur, Louisiana. Rashida tells it like it is in this June 6th U.S. press event.
Good afternoon, everyone. As he stated, I'm Rashida Sibley Ozan. What he did not mention is that I'm also a mom of six and a grandmother of one. I live in a small town in Louisiana called Sulphur. Sulfur, just as it sounds, it smells like sulfur. It smells like rotten eggs. We smell chemicals all the time. But as many of you know, Louisiana's climate is prone to extreme weather events, particularly hurricanes, which bring devastating storms, heavy rainfall, and flooding that test our resilience every single day. Not only that, but we're dealing with rising sea level and coastal erosion. In 2020, in the midst of a global pandemic, we also had two major hurricanes to hit in Southwest Louisiana, Hurricane Laura and Hurricane Delta. Myself and my six children were displaced because of these hurricanes. We found ourselves homeless, living in from hotel to hotel, and at one point in my vehicle, not knowing where we were going to stay the night. We were eventually placed in a three-bedroom FEMA trailer. We stayed in that FEMA trailer for almost 2 years. During this time, there were other people in my community who needed assistance, who did not have the funding to provide themselves with safe shelter during a time where they didn't know they were going to be homeless, where they didn't know they weren't going to have food to feed their children. This is when I started the Vessel Project of Louisiana in 2020. not knowing that a few short weeks after that, we would be dealing with another major storm, Hurricane Delta. So Hurricanes Laura and Delta were only 6 weeks apart. People who didn't lose everything during Hurricane Laura lost everything during Hurricane Delta. This displaced more people. We had newly homeless. We had people who had never had to reach out for assistance before. They were scraping and scrapping, looking for ways to feed their children and ways to help their families survive. This is when we recognized that our community of Southwest Louisiana was a resource desert. There were not the proper resources in place for the abundance of people who now needed assistance. We reached out to agencies like FEMA, who only gave pennies to those of us who were not homeowners. All of this must stop. The agencies in place did not help those of us that were not white and wealthy. During this time, as Vessel Project was developing and I was continuing to help those families in need while being in need myself, there were also chemical explosions that were happening at the local facilities. But because we were in a shelter in place, the people who could not leave the community had to stay there in the presence of those chemical releases. We started connecting the dots. And we looked at industrial pollution and how industrial pollution leads to the intensity of these hurricanes and storms that we were seeing in Southwest Louisiana and the way that they were coming back to back to back. A couple months after that, in February of 2021, we were hit with yet another devastating storm, Winter Storm Uri, that froze states like Texas, Mississippi, and Louisiana. So those of us who were still trying to recover from two major hurricanes, now we found ourselves recovering from a winter freeze that left many without power or water for almost a week or more. When is enough going to be enough? When are we going to stop polluting these communities? These polluting facilities are releasing dangerous chemicals like methane and benzene into the air. These chemicals are warming our climate. The greenhouse gas emissions that are coming from these facilities are causing these climate-induced disasters. The climate-induced disasters are displacing people and families. We're climate survivors not because we want to be, because we have to be. And many times we hear the question of why don't you leave the community? This is our home. This is where we are from. This is where my children were born and raised. This is where their friends are, their families are. This is where their ancestors have died. We don't have to leave. There's another side of Louisiana that many don't see, because many times when you hear about Louisiana, it's because of all of the storms that happen. The other side of Louisiana is that it is beautiful. It is sportsman's paradise. It is where 90% of the world's seafood come from the Gulf Coast. It is where you get music and culture, things like Zydeco, Mardi Gras parade, festivals, and carnivals. People come here to vacation, but we get to live here. We're going to continue to fight for our home. We shouldn't have to pay the price. Because of these storms that are constantly devastating our community, causing us to have to pick up and move, we are also seeing higher prices when it comes to paying our insurance. We're seeing higher prices when we're paying our electricity bill, our gas bills. That is unfair to us. It is high time that these polluters pay. If they're going to continue to come to our communities and pollute our air and our water and cause these climate-induced disasters to increase, they need to pay the price. And I'm not talking about the pennies that they pay when they have an explosion or a chemical leak. Those are pennies to them. I'm saying they need to mitigate what they've done. They need to make it better. It is high time that our government officials make these polluters pay. Polluters like Chevron, polluters like Citgo, polluters like Venture Global, Cheniere, Shell, they need to pay. When I walk out my back door, I can see over 14 petrochemical and other chemical polluting facilities. That's not right. But yet when I go to the whiter, wealthier side of town, you don't see the same image. We have been made a sacrifice because of our skin color, because we are Black, brown, indigenous, because we have low income. We're being treated less than, and enough is enough. We're calling on all of those elected officials to stand on the side of people, stand on the side of what's right, stand on the side of equity, stand on the side of justice. Make these polluters pay. Stop approving new fossil fuel infrastructure in our communities. It is time that we rebuild communities sustainably and resiliently so that we don't have to continue to pick ourselves up by the bootstraps. No one wakes up in the morning wanting to be resilient. We're resilient because we have to be. And it's time out. Thank you all so much for having me today. And there's...
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
So much more I can say.
From Sulphur, Louisiana, that was Rashida Ozan. We travel now farthest north to the Arctic Sea, where more communities are struck by climate change. Daryl Tedjik is a resident of Tuktoyaktuk, a fishing village on the shores of the Arctic Ocean, at risk due to rising sea levels. Daryl is working on a documentary called Happening to Us about climate impacts in his community. This short presentation by Daryl was recorded in Ottawa at a press event on Parliament Hill, hours before the CEOs of Canada's giant fossil fuel companies spoke directly to the House of Commons Environment Committee. No one whose life was ruined by climate disasters will speak there. They will speak here. Here is Daryl Tedjik.
My name is Daryl in my language, so... my impact of my community is like it's washing away from the ocean because we live on the coastal side of the Atlantic Ocean, and where I have a video, but I can't show it because the timing is so short for all of us. But in the next few months, now we're gonna release the full video of my video, so be look out for that. It's called Happening to Us in our community. Now, I've been down to Spain for climate change and other places as well in Canada, besides the side. And what I heard from scientists is from last year, Tuktoyaktuk is going to be washed away in 50 years if we don't do nothing right now. But there's been a little bit of stuff happening right now, like putting down riprap around community. And there's like a main island covering our harbor. And it's going to be washed away about 10 to 15 years. And it's going to affect our community and going to be washed away more faster. So want to spread awareness around the world what's happening to our local community. And everyone knows each other there and everyone knows what's going on. And after we're doing the video, everyone's seeing what's happening in our local community now. Everyone's like worried about their home washing away into the ocean. Back in the day, we used to have like a little bit farther out, about 1 to 2 kilometers away from the shoreline. But now it's like buying people houses. The beach is buying the people's houses. But now everyone's want to move their house because they're scared of like, it's going to be broken, and when it's broken and you won't have the money to fix it. And I don't know if whoever going to fix it or not. Everyone don't want to move their house because they're scared of that. And we're on a shoreline, and it's very scary watching where I grew up for all my life. I grew up in Tuktoyaktuk. I love that community. I want to try to help out as much as I can before it washes away, and just want to let my grandchildren and my in future, I want to have my children where I grew up around and show them before it washes away. But nature is nature, but us, we're adapting, but we want to try slow it down a bit before it washes away, because if Tuckwatch washes away and we have no home, and where we're going to go next. But yeah, thank you for listening to me.
That was Daryl Tejik from Tuktoyaktuk on the Arctic Ocean. More to come from extreme climate survivors in Canada. But first, we go to one of the deadliest wildfires in U.S. history. The 2018 Camp Fire burned down Paradise. Alan Myers is a survivor of the Camp Fire in Paradise, California, speaking here at the Climate Survivors Press event in Washington, D.C.
And thank you, everybody, for being here. As I've heard, you know, we are part of a group that we didn't necessarily sign up for. There are climate survivors around the country and around the world. I grew up in Paradise. My mom grew up in Paradise, a little sleepy mountain town of 28,000 in the foothills of the Sierras. And as a kid, you know, we were certain that Halloween would get rained out. You know, that was always a joke. We'd want to go, but we'd get rain. Well, on November 8th of 2018, there hadn't been any measurable rainfall for over 200 days. It was record low humidity, record high red flag wind event, and a spark from a mismanaged utility company, PG&E. Now, they may have been the spark, but the conditions were set long before by the fossil fuel industry, which created the conditions, which created the climate crisis. Hot, dry, windy conditions that took that spark and made it into the most costly disaster in the world for 2018. Billions of dollars in damages. PG&E pleaded guilty to 85 counts of manslaughter. Now, I'm curious about the other actors. PG&E might have been standing there with the match, but it was the fossil fuel industry that threw fuel on the fire. I lost my family's home, every home I ever played in as a kid, the schools that I went to, the hospital that I was born at, are all gone. There has been an erasure of my identity and my community's identity. Things that we would look for that would remind us of who we are and where we come from are gone. This is what is left of my family's home. This is a jar of ashes. Home that I grew up in. Home that I stood next to my mom as she passed away when I was 11. This is our culture and our identity that's been reduced to ashes. There are campfire survivors in every state in the country. These are climate refugees displaced within the United States. My parents were unable to rebuild. My stepmom now suffers from Parkinson's and post-traumatic stress disorder. My dad is a full-time caregiver. I still have friends that are living in garages, temporary living conditions, being bounced around, living out of their cars because they are unable to rebuild and have not found their feet. Now, PG&E has paid out for their lawsuit, but what about the role of the fossil fuel industry? They are absolutely in part responsible for this disaster and should be held accountable. And that's why we're here today, to make sure that our stories are heard and that they are made to be held accountable. Thank you.
Alan Myers, raised and burned out in paradise. He just spoke at the press event organized by Public Citizen and Chesapeake Climate Action Network.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.